Hey guys, I'm back. I know it's been a few weeks. Sorry, I was on vacay for a week. And then when I got back from vacation, I was feeling pretty under the weather. I was sick there for a little bit, but I'm feeling better now. Don't worry, it wasn't the Rona. Just had a regular old nasty cold. So yeah, you can still get a cold even with Corona going around. You can still get those normal sicknesses. That's all it was. Wasn't feeling too great. So took a couple weeks off, but I am back. And this week, it's been a while since we've talked about a cult. So we're jumping into the Children of God cult. So this cult, let's just jump right in. This cult called Children of God, for the most part, when it was running in its heyday, it started out being called the Teens for Christ. Then it was renamed Children of God. And then the Family of Love. And now, yes, now, I said now, it is still running. It is now called the Family International. So let's talk about the Children of God cults. David Berg, aka King David, aka Father David, aka Mo, or Moses David. He also liked to be called Father or Grandfather. That's what he made his followers call him. He started the movement. He was the founder in the late 60s. And he had a message and a promise of salvation. So in the beginning, it was innocent enough. Teens for Christ seemed like any other liberated group of hippies in 1968. You know, they had the long hair, hippie attire. They would hang out at the beach playing their guitar. Nothing unusual about them. Teens for Christ preached about simple living and good deeds. So it's no wonder that the hippie culture was kind of attracted to this cult. But their founder, David Berg, would eventually pervert Teens of Christ into his own international religious cult, exploiting young people to accomplish his disgusting perverted goals. There's reports of sexual violence, incest, brainwashing, and it, like I said, it still operates today. So David Berg started as a preacher who traveled around to different churches with his children in the 1960s, but his message wasn't really catching on. So he was discouraged and he was running out of money. So the family moved to Huntington Beach, California in 1967 to run a coffee shop. As they worked, they preached, and more people began to listen. It was at this point Berg realized that in order to attract the youth, he had to completely change his approach. So later on in this newsletter in 1979, Berg recalls this light bulb moment that went off at this time. He says, "I saw something was really happening and was really going to explode. I just knew it. I saw the Lord was really doing something. That's when I began to come down and teach in my dark glasses, beret, baggy pants, old torn jacket, and tennis shoes." So he changed the name of his religious cult. I'm still going to call it a cult, even though that's obviously not the word he's using when he talks about it. His religious movement, I guess we could say, from Teens of Christ to Children of God, hoping to appeal to a wider group of youth, vulnerable youth. And he was able to get hundreds of followers in just a few years. And the late actor River Phoenix was even part of this group of followers. He convinced hundreds of people that he was going to save the world. He said, "We will take you away from this world. We will take you away from this country. We're going to make a better one." David Berg said, "If you love the Lord, you'll love others. And you'll try to love them like the Lord loved you. And you'll try to save them like Jesus has saved you." So new members would come into this group, come into these meetings, and it just seemed to be full of love. they did something called love bombing, where they would just hug you, like this big group hug, and tell you how much they loved you. Now, think about this. You're going into this meeting, this group of people that is just putting out a bunch of love and good vibes. And of course, that's going to draw people in. People that feel like they need to be loved. People who are looking for love. They're craving that. They might be lacking something in their life. You know, they're coming in and they're seeing this guy, this leader, who puts off a very caring, loving vibe. And he's very charismatic. You know, he's saying things like, you know, don't worry about tomorrow, all this cliche, love, peace, so on, that fluff talk that really pulls people in. So let's talk a second about the background of David Berg. His upbringing was, his parents were both very quote unquote religious. Evangelical is the household he was brought up in. He was born in 1919. And his mother was actually a preacher that would travel around and give sermons. And she was more of the aggressive fire brimstone type sermon. If you don't know what I mean when I say fire and brimstone, that's just, you know, that style of preaching. You know, there's different styles out there. If you've been to church or any kind of religious gathering, you know, there's different ways they get their point across or different styles. And there's that, you know, very positive, loving, non-judgmental, where they really don't put the fear of God into you. And then there's the one that instills the fear of God in you and is very much the fire of hell, fire, brimstone, you know, rain down. Fire and brimstone actually coming from the Bible, Sodom and Gomorrah, fire and brimstone. Anyways, so that environment that he grew up in, as a child, he would go with his mom to these different sermons that she would travel around and preach. And so that's the environment he was thrust into as a child at a young age. Now, moving on, in 1944 is when he got married to a woman called Jane Miller. And David and Jane had four kids. And at this time, he's working on his doctrine, his own doctrine, coming up with his own ideals. And over the next 20 years, you know, he's working on his own set of quote unquote religion. You know, we're talking, this is 60s and 70s, and he's trying to make it all about love. He's out there on the streets spreading this word of love. Now, there's one case of a lady who speaks of her mother joining the cult when she was just a very young child. And she says that her mother attended a meeting and got pulled into this cult. And the father wanted nothing to do with it, and he didn't want his two kids to have anything to do with it or go anywhere near it. So the mother actually brought in other members of the cults, and they physically removed the two kids from the father, left the house, moved to a commune, and the mother changed the name of the two kids. So this is the kind of situation, honestly, that was typical of a cult. Let's just talk a second about what defines a cult, you know, these markers that really kind of indicate whether or not you may be in a cult. Number one, of course, the leader is the ultimate authority. So he is at the top. If you're not allowed to criticize your leader, even if the criticism is true, you're probably in a cult. Cults begin with a charismatic leader who claims some supreme knowledge. They may call themselves a prophet, a messiah, a messenger, an enlightened teacher. Cult leaders convince members to forfeit their critical thinking ability in return for a sense of belonging, authority, and purpose. To members, it doesn't matter what the evidence or logic may suggest. The leader is always right, and their misdeeds are always justified. So you can't criticize the leader at all. That is forbidden. Number two, sign that you're in a cult, the group suppresses skepticism. So what that means is if you're only allowed to study your organization through your approved sources, you're probably in a cult. If you're a member and you're doubting things, then you are supposed to isolate yourself from any outside influences and focus solely on their doctrine. You can't criticize anything. That is forbidden. people who go against the group, they're viewed as persecutors, and they're given labels like anti-traitor or suppressive. So they're discouraged from consuming any material that is not of this group. So that's a surefire sign that you are in a cult. Another sign is if the group kind of puts down past members, they kind of make reasoning and excuses. If there's, you know, let's say there's a member who leaves the group for some, you know, good reason, but they make it sound like it's not legitimate. If you can't think of a legitimate reason for leaving your group, you're probably in a cult, because the cult considers itself the ultimate authority on truth. It can't imagine anybody leaving it with their integrity intact. So it has to perpetuate a false narrative that the former members were deceived, proud, immoral, or lazy. If former members speak out, they are dismissed as bitter and angry or evil. You know, they're the ones that are wrong. The cults usually does some kind of shunning or shame. They shame the former members, and they really keep them from infecting other members with the truth, with what is actually going on. So they make them sound like, you know, these members that became enlightened and realized they were in a crazy cult and they break away. You know, if you're still in the cult, everybody's making it seem like, no, they're the crazy ones. Another sign that you're in a cult is, you know, they make you paranoid about the outside worlds. If your group insists that the end of the world is near, you know, that's a good sign that maybe you're in a cult. They really make it seem like they are the protection from the evil of the outside world, that there's destruction and evil out there, and they thrive on conspiracy theories and catastrophic thinking, end of the world shit that they can save you from. So in an effort to draw in more paying members, cults are often very aggressive in recruiting people, and they justify that by saying that they are saving people from the evil worlds. And those who reject the cult's message are, you know, they're the ones that are evil and stupid. Moving on, the next sign. If the group relies on shame cycles, so if you need your group in order to feel worthy and loved and sufficient, you're probably in a cult. Next sign is the leader is above the law. So if you're held to a different moral standard, I'm not talking about legal. Well, I am talking about legal, but legal and moral. Specifically, though, in regards to sex, because that is something that's, you know, cults seem to really play around with, the moral and legal standings of sex. So you're probably in a cult. You know, a big idea among leaders is that they're above the law. So that means they can get away with anything sexually without any repercussions of it. And also economically. So they really exploit people financially and sexually. And when these leaders are confronted, they don't confess, but they just come up with some justification for their actions. And sexual grooming of members is very common. Next, if the group uses thought reform methods, if your serious questions are answered with cliches, you're probably in a cult. Brainwashing is the process that they use to break you down, and they kind of break down your sense of identity and your ability to think rationally. So another sign would be if they are elitist. So if your group is the solution for all the world's problems, you're probably in a cult. So cults see themselves as the ones that are chosen. They're the enlightened ones, and they are supposed to transform all of you and the entire world. This sense of responsibility is often manipulated by cult leaders who coerce members into sexual favors and, like I said, financial, like risky financial behavior, free manual labor. So they're doing all your chores. And of course, they got to go out and do all this recruiting in order to further the cause. So here's another sign that you're in a cult. If there's no financial transparency, and what that means is if you're not allowed to see what is going on with all the money, you're probably in a cult. Because if you're a churchgoer, just know, like, you should know this, but I could go up to, you know, a member in my church and ask to see, and they actually, most churches, I mean, every church I've been to, they put out information about where the money is going. You know exactly all that tithing that you're doing, you know where all that money is going. So, if they're keeping it a secret from you and they're not telling you where the money is going, that's a big red flag. You should be able to know. So, and you know, the last sign that you're in a cult is if they're doing secret rites, they're performing secret rites. If there's secret teachings or ceremonies that you didn't know about until after you actually joined, you're probably in a cult. They use these secret rituals, these rites of passage that solidify your membership, your loyalty. It's like an initiation. And you have to go through some kind of test. You have to financially contribute. So, and usually these tests or this rite of passage that they're doing, this initiation, they're confusing, they're weird, they're often offensive, and they kind of disorient you, confuse you, and manipulate you. So there are some signs, kind of the hallmarks, the telltales that you may be in a cult. Those are big red flags. So moving on, let's go back to more of the Children of God cult. So it was stressed that the whole group was your family. So they kind of stripped down the labels of mother and father, and everyone was called aunt and uncle. Now, there's over 200 communes at one time in the Children of God, and they're all funded by the members that have joined, these people that have to give over all their money, all their possessions. Again, we just talked about that being a sign that you are in a cult. Now, one reason that people really fell for this group is they saw this very positive Christian following Jesus, very loving, a family togetherness. Now, to be fully committed to this lifestyle and committed to Jesus means you have to be committed to Father David. And Father David preached that he was going to save everybody from this impending doom. He was always speaking of the end of the world, the end of the human race. He taught his followers that death was the ultimate orgasm. His followers were always living just constantly preparing for the end of days. That was their lifestyle. The doomsday that he speaks of actually involves a huge pyramid that's 1,500 miles wide. So the members were told by David that in order to get into heaven, that they were preparing to fight this battle, and one day the moon was going to break open and this pyramid was going to come down. So yeah, he's fucking crazy. And the fact that so many people believed this bullshit is really, that really gets me. But again, that's what cults are all about, right? The brainwashing and convincing people to follow him and believe him no matter what. And they did believe him. So they were dispersed all over the world to speak his word. And he would constantly send out, he would record tapes and he would send out like writings, pamphlets, letters, just to keep in touch with everyone and make sure that everybody's staying on track and doing what they're supposed to do. So they're traveling all over the world, spreading his word, his crazy fucked up word. And by the mid 70s, he had over 3,000 followers. and they started selling door-to-door music videos and tapes and posters. And this is what the kids were doing. They were doing God's work, or Crazy Father David's work. They weren't going to school. So they were kept from the outside world. You know, it doesn't surprise me that they weren't allowed to go to school, because they had to stay within their own group so that nothing would influence them, and that only his doctrine and his ideas are the only things that would get in their brain. Now, they're also out on the street singing, and they're trying to get money and food to be able to live, because any money that they made from all these other ventures, like selling stuff door to door, that was all siphoned back to David Berg, of course. So they're living poor. Now, I did mention something about River Phoenix being a part of this cult. That's because his parents were in the cult when he was just a young child. He was a toddler, actually. He was 3 years old when his parents joined. And some friends of River Phoenix say that his parents, like, their heart was in the right place, because they were just looking for that alternative to that white picket fence type of lifestyle. They wanted to bring their children up in a loving environment. And they left when River was 7 years old. But by that time, the damage had already been done. He was in it from 3 years old to 7 years old. And that experience that he went through, it stuck with him forever. Joaquin Phoenix, which you know as the Joker most recently, awesome actor, he's great, I love him. You know, he's a little wackadoo, but, you know, he's an awesome actor. He was 4 years younger than River, so he was pretty young. He was only three when the parents pulled out. So now all the children were forced to follow his rules no matter what, without question, just like everyone else. Again, typical cult behavior. It's all about control. Everything about your life is controlled. There is nothing that you can do for your own self, your own actions, your own will. One member even says that they were even controlled so much, down to the fact that they were controlled on how much toilet paper they could use. So David Berg speaks a lot of the law of love. Now, this becomes very muddy water, because he speaks of sexual sin, but at the same time, he expects everyone there to turn over their bodies and give whatever is expected to be asked of you sexually. Of course, he twists this up to make it seem as though this is the right thing and that this is of God. He says, this is a quote of his, he says, "We're even going to have sex in heaven. How about that? Isn't that wonderful? Love all the girls you want and all the handsome boys you want, and love all you want to, and never get tired, never be impotent, never have a headache, never get hungry, never get sleepy, no pains, no VD, no nothing except joy and praise and hallelujah and lots of fun with your bridegroom and all your friends and loved ones and the family of God, his family of love, his children of God in heaven when Jesus comes." So this ex-member speaks about how in the beginning it was very pure. You didn't even hold hands or kiss or touch. But about 1972, things started to change. David Berg then starts talking about God's love, and love is sex. He says in their family, they're all one body, and all the way sexually as well. Sex was considered how you showed God's love, the ultimate expression. This included even married couples sleeping with other people. So now they're swingers in the commune. Now, this was most likely just his selfish need to be some kind of, you know, because he's some dirty old man and, you know, he wanted to get off. And so, you know, not so much some profound ideology that he actually believed in or came up with or made sense. It was most likely a cover for a relationship that he started with someone named Kieran Zerbe. He's having an affair now with this girl that she started working for him as his personal secretary. And she was 23 years old when she joined the cult. And this means she was 27 years younger than him. And so they started having this affair. Now, he does stay married to his then wife. She kind of gets, you know, pushed on the back burner, of course. And he's having this affair with Karen. And the wife does eventually leave him. And Karen now becomes his second wife. And he called her his queen. But he also makes her go out and sleep with other men. So Karen actually becomes the first of this group of women that Berg calls his flirty fishers. So he has this group of women that are supposed to go out and have sex with new members, potential new members. So kind of a way to lure new guys in is what it seems to be. So he instructed them to go out, have lots of sex with potential new members, and they were also not allowed to use any form of birth control. Because, of course, the reasoning behind that is if these women are having babies, he's getting new members added to his cult. In his annual report in 1979, he stated that his flirty fishers had witnessed to over a quarter of a million souls, loved over 25,000 of them, and won about 19,000 to the Lord. By 1981, hundreds of Jesus babies had been born as a result of flirty fishing. Now, eventually, the cult stopped this practice due to AIDS-related concerns. Berg's daughter says it was religious prostitution. This is how she put it. She said, "I had to quit looking at this man as my father, but as the leader of a worldwide movement that was destroying lives." Now, 1975, Karen, his new wife that he has out sleeping around as a flirty fisher, she sleeps with some guy in the Canary Islands and she gets pregnant. And she has a son whose name is Ricky Rodriguez. And Ricky was going to be the heir of all of this. He was going to be the prince. That's what the members were told. So all of David Berg's children, they were all grown by this time. And this new child, this one, Ricky, he can now groom him into whatever he wants him to be from birth. He can manipulate him and mold him and form him into anything he wants. Now the reason I say, you know, David Berg's child, you know, his other children are grown and so he's going to take this child. Obviously, it's not his biological child, but David does adopt him. So there's now this book that he puts out and it's distributed and it is a book of Ricky's young life. And it is somewhat of an instruction manual telling people, this is how you raise your child. Raise your kids the way I am raising Ricky. And the book starts with just normal child activities, but then changes through the years. So Ricky was raised by a group of women, these nannies, and they were instructed to introduce him to sex pretty much right away. And by the time he was 5, he's already been introduced to sexual acts. Now, this book is then expanded into a whole new doctrine, and it is called the Law of Love, and it is distributed to all new members. Berg is putting it out there in this letter that anyone can have sex with anyone, no matter how old they are. So, things are getting worse, obviously. He's now including children. These young children are reading this letter and realizing that this means that now they are being pulled into this whole sexual world that David Berg is stressing in his cult. He's now advocating childhood sex. He says in a quote, But why did the Lord make you able to have children at the age of 11, 12, 13, if you weren't supposed to have sex then? That's his justification for being a pedophile. Gross. Fucking gross. So this means that these young girls had to be available to any man at any time for sex. These young girls, you know, they're even 12 years old. They were taught that it was a privilege. Now, there were these schedules that were made up. Rotations of these girls to men. You weren't allowed to say no. And oh my God, I feel so sorry for these girls. Listening to these interviews of these girls years later, talking about their experiences and what they went through. They were brought into these beds of these adults or even married couples, and they had to perform these sexual acts. These acts of love is what they were told. And they felt horrible afterwards. They felt bad about themselves. And you had no choice. You had to comply. You know, you were just completely robbed of your innocence and your childhood. And in true cult form, of course, there's nowhere for them to go. There is no one for them to talk to. There is no one to save them. They have no voice. And if they did bring something up, if they did voice their concerns, they would just get in bigger trouble. They might be put into these so-called prison camps. Anyone who tried to go against the word of David Berg, you tried to contest it, and you were put into these prison camps because you were rebelling against these sexual acts that you were forced to do. Berg's own daughter, her name was Deborah, she described her father's actions in a 1984 interview. She says that she claims that he attempted to have sex with her several times and engaged in a sexual relationship with his other daughter, Faith. You know, again, he says things like God created people, boys and girls, to have sex by the age of 12. He wrote that in one of his letters that he puts out. And, you know, there's these pictures of... it's disgusting. You know, you've got these adult women that are doing oral things to little boys. And, you know, there's another picture of this woman laying next to this little tightening toddler in bed. And her hand is suggestively near his penis. And the caption under that one read, "Well, they told us to go to bed." Anyways, it's disgusting. It makes my stomach upset just thinking about what these adults are doing to these children. So in later interviews with some ex-members, there was a 2020 interview in 1988 where this ex-member said, "It's just a piece of educational material. It's actually fun to watch a child." Oh no, this wasn't an ex-member. I'm sorry. I think this person was still in it. Actually, if they're giving an interview on 2020, they probably are not still in it. So yeah, I guess it would be a next one. Sorry, I kind of went off there for a second. I was looking at my notes and I didn't write whether or not it was an ex-member. But you know what? If they're giving it an interview on national television, I'm going to assume it was an ex-member. Anyways, he says, "It's actually fun to watch a child, in this case, experience life." So parents like him, he was a father, this guy is saying this, they were reassured that by allowing kids to explore sex at any age, they were raising children the natural way. The free expression of sexuality, including fornication, adultery, lesbianism, though not male homosexuality, and incest, were not just permitted, but encouraged, is what one member had written. In 93, Larry King, the TV host, I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, he was talking to a former member and asking him how he knew these policies existed. And this member replied, because I was ordered in the group to have sex with a 10-year-old by the leadership of the group. And Larry King asked him, so did you? And he said, yes. It was to get me in deeper into the group so that I would be afraid to ever come out and speak against the group because he did something, you know, horrible. So they kind of had him by the balls, you know? So by 1986, there's about 10,000 members of the Children of God. Now, this generation of teenagers, they're being groomed to be this army to prepare for the apocalypse. There's these teen training camps that are all over in other countries, you know, Japan, Philippines. That's where a lot of them were sent to be prepared for war, brainwashed, trained, however you want to say it. And one girl describes how when you first get there, you're put in confinement and you're forced to confess. You're forced to confess, to fast. They break you down, basically. And you have no contact with the outside world, and your passport is taken away from you on arrival. So these places, your day consisted of early morning strenuous activity and exercise to the point where you would pass out. And then your classes, where you're being preached all this crazy shit from the cults, you know, getting everybody on board with the revolution. And if you do as you're told and you fall in line with all these strict rules, you know, you still are going through hell. But if you don't, then you're physically punished. You had to confess. You had to apologize. You were beaten with a board publicly. And then when all of this was done, the theory is that you come out a new person and they might even change your name. So examples of the punishment that they had to go through. Let's say you had impure thoughts. So you might be put in solitary confinement and you were beaten and you were starved and you were forced to exercise until you threw up or passed out. And these kids were actually expected to be grateful for their punishment. And they were taught that they should not cry. They should smile through all of this. And after they move on from these teen compounds, they're sent out to a different compound somewhere else. Now, one of the tactics that they used to try to kind of snuff out any idea if somebody wanted to leave, they would tell them that if you tried to leave the cults, I mean, of course, that's not the word they use. They would use a different word, or they obviously don't call themselves a cult. Anyway, moving on. If you try to leave, then you're going to get out in the world and you're going to become a drug addict or a prostitute or something bad's going to happen to you. You know, they put these ideas in their head so they wouldn't want to go out into the real world. So they were made to feel that if they tried to leave, God would punish them. So in 1988, all these teen training camps just closed all of a sudden. Finally, at this point, there's people out there that are wondering what happened to friends and family members. The Children of God started to be kind of under a microscope, started to get looked at. Even people that were living around these compounds were wondering what the hell's going on in there. Now, the younger members, the teenagers, they moved around a lot so that they didn't get any roots anywhere. No stability. And of course, David Berg and his immediate family members, they're living it up. Okay, they're living it up on all the income that's coming in. And they're living in secret locations. So they're moving around too, and it's all secret. And because it was such a private lifestyle that he wasn't known, nobody knew where he was. And it kind of kept that mystery. Probably gave him more credibility, because they never saw him, never had any direct contact with him. They just knew that he was the prophet and he was to be listened to. Again, he makes these tape recordings and he writes papers, and that's all sent out to everybody, and that's how he's still controlling them through what they're listening to and what they're reading. So, October 1994, David Berg dies at 75 years old. Looks like he just died of natural causes, like he just died of old age. He died in his sleep. So nothing crazy, nothing radical, no assassination, nothing nuts. No crazy story there. He just dies in his sleep. All of his members around the world hear of this news. And, you know, a lot of them are thinking, what do we do now? Now, the heir that we spoke of earlier, his boy, Ricky, he's 19 years old at the time. So, of course, Karen Zerbe, who's the mother of Ricky, and David Berg's, like, right-hand man, so to speak, his wife, common law, I believe. I don't think there's a legal binding there. So she takes over. And members are called to a meeting, and a letter from Karen with new instructions is given out. And it includes things like, you don't have to be swingers anymore. You don't have to have sex with children anymore. So she puts out this new policy. But apparently, this was just an act for everybody on the outside to fall for. Since they were kind of being looked at now. She puts out this new policy that kind of makes it sound like things are changing. There's no more, you know, disgusting sex crap going on in the cult. But in reality, nothing actually changes. She tells them she's only saying this because the world doesn't approve of our actions, but God still wants us to love each other in the way that they have already been loving each other for many years. So at this time, there's actually a lot of people who leave the cult after Berg dies. So let's talk for a second about some of these people that leave the cult. And there's one lady who even spoke of her experience because she was kicked out of the cult. She was kicked out because she was smoking pot. She's 27 years old. So now at 27, spending her whole life in this environment, and that's all she knew, going out into the real world was a big shock. And it was hard for her to deal with, you know, and now she's coming to the realization that she was sexually abused her whole life. So she gets out, she starts doing drugs, she starts drinking, she's depressed, she's having these problems coping. And ex-members really, they are really having a hard problem with coping in the real world, and a lot of them do develop addictions. You know, they were forced to live in a cult, and they were controlled, they were told what to do, and their way of life, their norm, is not the norm out there in the real world. So now they're realizing all this stuff they went through was wrong and they were abused. Again, let's talk a second about River Phoenix. So his family left the cult when he was 7. But he does say that these demons follow him through life. He does say that he was exposed to sex at 4 years old. And if you're not familiar with River Phoenix, it's a very sad story. He was a very bright young actor, and he developed a drug addiction. Now, can you say that the Children of God is the reason for that drug addiction? No, there's no proof of that. But what he was exposed to and forced to do in his childhood up until he was 7, from 3 to 7, that's a lot. You know, to be that young and to be exposed to sex. And so, I don't know, in my opinion, you know, when you're that young and you're exposed to these horrible things, it's gonna affect you. You know, you're a sponge when you're that young. You know, you learn a lot of things. A lot of things that happen to you when you're that age, they make you who you are. You know, what happens to you when you're a kid, that carries over in your life. So you're so vulnerable, and that, you know, that messes you up. You know, you talk to drug addicts, and there's something that sent them on that path most of the time. So he developed this drug addiction, and he took his own life, so to speak. He overdosed, and this was in 1993. He was at a popular nightclub called the Viper Room, and he had a combination of heroin, cocaine, alcohol, and Valium, and died of an overdose. And he was only 23 years old. You know, he was still a baby. And I'm sorry, you can't blame that on drugs. It's what caused him to do the drugs, whatever that may be. But I do know that the influence of this cult and the things that these children were subjected to really fucked them up. Imagine trying to live a normal life, whatever that may be, after going through that as a kid. You know, it's hard enough to live a normal life just growing up in a normal environment and a healthy family environment. But being brought up like that and trying to live a healthy, normal life, I couldn't imagine. So let's talk about Ricky. It's 1995, and Ricky is now 20, Berg's son, the one who was supposed to be the chosen one. He was being groomed to take over. He now gets permission from his mother to travel around the world to other communes. And now he's exposed to what other people, all the members, are living like on these compounds. He sees how hard these people are working and working for the leadership. All the money goes back to the leadership, and they're living poor. They're living in these shitty conditions. So Ricky sees this and he wants to make a change. He doesn't think it's right. He has these ideas and these hopes of making big changes, turning things around. He doesn't like what he sees. His mother does not like the idea and doesn't listen to him. So he starts thinking about how he can leave. So he lies and he tells her that he's going to England, but he actually goes to the United States. And he stays with one of the former members, the one I spoke of a little while ago, who got kicked out. Her name is Jemima, and she was the one kicked out for smoking pot. And at this time, she was actually trying to help others in their transition into normal life after leaving the cult. So he actually goes and he stays with her for a time being. And she described him as being very humble and just wanting to turn things around. You know, a good guy, wanting to make right, of all this situation. And he even marries somebody who, another ex-member of the cult. So he's got a lot of issues with his mother. And his mother moves around a lot, just like David did. That's the norm. You know, they keep things very secret. And to keep herself protected, she moves around a lot. So this means Ricky doesn't even know where his mother is at any time. So in 2005, he hears that she might be in Tucson, Arizona. And so he heads to Tucson. His mindset is, if he can take his mother down, then he can end this cult. So there's a videotape of him preparing. He's got these weapons on a table in front of him, and he's talking into this videotape. He makes this tape. And he's talking about the need. He says it's not a want, it's a need for revenge and a need for justice. He's ready to make his mother pay for everything that she has done. So, all the abuse that she's subjected people to, the sexual abuse, the physical abuse, you know, everything that's gone on over the years, he's ready to make her pay. So he sets off to Tucson to find his mom, but of course he doesn't know where she is. So he turns to one of his mom's friends to find out where she is. And this lady was actually involved in all of this back when Ricky was young. And she was involved in the cult as well. She was involved in the sexual abuse of young children. Her name was Angela Smith, and she was actually one of his nannies. So she was directly abusing him. But he gets a hold of her, and she agrees to talk to him. And the video that he records was the night before he goes to meet with her. And, you know, again, in this video, he says something about having a small window of opportunity to be able to get the information out of this person. So she meets with him. Apparently, she goes to his apartment. And he tries to get information from her about where his mother is. And he doesn't get the information. She's not giving it up. So now shit goes down. There's a struggle. And you know this by the defensive marks that are on her arms. And he ends up killing her. There's stab wounds in her torso, and then he kills her by slitting her throat. So after he murders her, he jumps in his car and he starts driving. At some point, he realizes that what he did was wrong, that he just did something horrible. So the next morning, this is January 9th, 2005, police are called to a driveway in Blythe, California. So somebody noticed someone sleeping in a car in a driveway, and they went up to the car to check it out and see, and they found Ricky with blood all over him. And he had shot himself in the head. So after this happened, it kind of brought things to light again. I brought this cult under a microscope again. They started looking at things. So I guess he did kind of bring it to light with, you know, his death. But this cult is still active today. There's not as many members as there was back then. There's only, I think, 1,700 now. About 1,700 members. And they are allowed to live in private homes now and work. And again, like I said, nowadays it is called the Family International. And they have a website. I went and checked it out. And all the shit that they spiel on there, it sounds all loving. Don't fall for it, people. It's all this loving. We love the world. We're here to help. Yada, yada, yada. It is... The Karen is still running it. She's still the head of it. And like I said, like she's not just going to change her ideals of sex and how things were run. She's not just going to swap that around and change it. So pretty sure there's still some brainwashing going on there. And I'm still going to call it a cult. So don't even be tempted, people. It is still a cult. And I guess when some of this stuff went down, when accusations were brought up, it spanned from other countries. So authorities said, you know, oh no, that, you know, that happened in another country. I can't do anything about it. Or so honestly, not a lot has happened as far as justice when it comes to these kids. Now, there are a couple of people that were arrested just recently, a couple of years ago. This guy named Derek Lincoln, he was recently arrested, and he was a member from 89 to 96. And someone tipped off, there was accusations towards him, and somebody tipped him off, and the authorities found him living this quiet life, seemingly not connected anymore. But he was raping 9-10 year olds. He would duct tape their mouth. He would beat them with a belt. He would hold them down and rape them. There was a 12-year-old who said that she apologized to him after raping her, but then he did it again over and over and over again. So he apparently had authority to access any home at any time, any bedroom. This picture of him online, he's a creepy, creepy son of a bitch. He's gross. But anyways, he finally got arrested recently. But again, that doesn't take away all of the abuse and how much all these young girls are fucked in the head because of this. It's just disgusting. You know, this David Berg that started this crazy cult and put out this word of, you know, God is love and love is sex. So he could have sex with anyone, you know, because he's some gross, disgusting, horny old man who, you know, just wanted to fuck all the girls on his compound. And so that's what he put out there and just let everybody do it so he could get away with it. And it's disgusting. Just a sick individual. And kind of wish he would have died a little more horrific and not just peacefully in his sleep. You know, he didn't deserve that. And I'm sorry, God is love and love is sex. That's not what the Bible says, people. So, you know, whether you're religious or not, you have to recognize that pedophilia is wrong. So agree with me on that. Amen. That's the story of this disgusting cult that is the Children of God cult that began innocent and pulled a bunch of people in, ruined a lot of people's lives, fucked a lot of people up, and physically and mentally. And so, that's it, guys. That's That's the story of the children of God. So, again, thank you for joining me. Sorry I was out of action there for a few weeks. It's good to be back. And, you know, again, I'll be posting some pictures on Instagram and Facebook, but none of those disgusting graphic ones. I'm not going to do that of, you know, what these people are doing to the little kids. But anyways, interesting story. Thank you for listening. And just a heads up, I am most likely only going to be doing this every other week now instead of every week. You know, life, work, everything. It's just really busy. And all the research and everything I do leading up to the weekly podcast, it's a lot and it's time consuming. So I'm going to be doing this every 2 weeks now, unless, you know, things change. But as of now, every 2 weeks. So I'm going to get out of here. You know where you can find me. Follow me into the dark. Follow the dark podcast at Gmail is how you contact me. But I'm out of here, guys. I will talk to you in 2 weeks. So have a good couple of weeks and a summer. And until then, stay dark, my friends.